Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show. This is Dr. Valerie Olmsted, and we are live tonight with my special guest, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, who is on the scene in New Orleans and has been, and she has quite a story to tell you all. So sit back and listen, and this is going to be a special two-part show. The one tonight, we're going to be talking about things that have been going on the one next week, on the 13th, we are going to be talking about possible solutions and what other people can do to help. So welcome to the show, Dr. Gallagher.
Hi.
Hi, I'm so glad to have you on, and I know you've been going through hell out there, and I know there are a lot of listeners who sympathize with you and really want to help. But first off, would you tell us about yourself?
Okay. First and foremost, I'm a mother of four children, and my daughter and I did stay for the storm, not by choice. It was by just circumstances. Mm-hmm. And I went to Loyola University in New Orleans in the 70s, so I stayed 70s and 80s in New Orleans and went on to naturopathic medical school in Tempe, Arizona, and decided I'd like to move now where I wanted to live. So I came back to New Orleans, and I've only been back here a year when the storm happened.
Mm-hmm. And I know that the school you went to, since I went to the same school, one of the things that I would like to have you do is just kind of tell us what happened during the storm and then, you know, kind of give us a chronological rundown of what happened to you and what you saw around you. And then, if you would, go into what you saw as you tried to help.
Okay. Since I've been back to New Orleans, it's been a real challenge in naturopathic medicine because the state does not recognize us as physicians or as anything. So what I was doing was just working, trying to push a bill through, and after that did not happen, I then decided to still want to stay here. So I went out and looked for another job. And I was working for an insurance company where I would put medical physicians on an insurance plan. And I was doing that for the entire week just prior to the storm, which was about 60 hours in the car, driving around all the lower parts of the state of Louisiana to ask physicians to please go on a discount plan so that people would be able to have some sort of health care at a discount rate.
Mm-hmm.
Friday afternoon, there was nothing going on. Everybody said there was a storm in the Gulf. It was no big deal. We went out to eat. Saturday morning, we get up about 10 o'clock, decided to go to the grocery store and couldn't figure out why there was a two-hour wait at the gas station, and that was when everybody started to run. It was on Saturday morning at around 10 in the morning. We came home, and we decided, should we go or not? At that time, they still kept saying Florida, so we decided we would stay. Sunday morning, my leg was really not feeling well from doing all the traveling in the car that prior week, and I do have a history of DVTs, which is a blood clot in your leg, so I went to the hospital. And again, we thought, well, should we try to drive and evacuate, or should we go to the hospital? And we chose to go to the hospital. While I was there, it took them 7 hours to have someone come in to be able to do the ultrasound on my leg to be able to decide if I should stay in the hospital or leave.
Mm-hmm.
This didn't happen. We just decided to leave. It was now 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday. And it was the hospital was going into lockdown. We had a choice: move up to the upper floors or go and leave and be on your own. So they said, here's your bill, here's your prescriptions. We can't help you. We can't fill them. We can't do anything. Just leave. And
wow.
We did. We went home, and within 3 hours, the electricity went off. Mm-hmm. So obviously evacuation was not an option at that point. It was very fast and very quick. We kind of hunkered down. I'm in a second floor apartment in Kenner, which is 2 blocks from the lake and 4 blocks from the airport. So I'm right there in the middle, the Kenner Airport, which is New Orleans Airport. We thought we would be safe. We were on the south side of the lake. It'd be okay. The storm came in very fast. Everybody fell asleep. However, I stayed awake the entire night. It was about 160-mile-an-hour winds on this side of the apartment. You could hear it funneling through, sounding like a loud train. Everybody's alarms were going off. Fire alarms were going off. Car alarms were going off. There was nobody around this area whatsoever. I do believe we were the only person for about 4 or 5 block radius. And it got very dark. very stormy. And then it was like would have loved to have opened the door just to feel the power of the wind, but something told me keep holding my hand on the lock so it didn't open.
Wow.
And it was a good thing I did, because I obviously would have been thrown off the balcony instantly. And then water and everything just kept blowing, fences down, roofs off. Water started to come up, but then the water started to go down. In the morning when the storm was over, it was about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Monday. It did not seem to have flooded so badly, and we were thankful we made it through the storm. No electricity, nothing, no communication whatsoever, no radio stations or anything. And all of a sudden, the water started rising, and it just started coming up. We couldn't figure out where. It was about halfway up our car in the parking lot. At that point, we thought, okay, it's just coming from somewhere, just let it go. Then we started to hear on the radio that one of the levees had broken. And we did not understand this. We didn't know anything about it. And we were tired. We just didn't pay attention. We'll go to sleep. We went to sleep, got up the next day, and the water was still there. In fact, it was rising even a little bit more. And then we started to see and hear looters in the area. Then we knew, okay, something's not right here. We need to try to get out of here. We had 3 cars. We started with 2 out, so we need to get out. Well, they floated down the road, and needless to say, they were lost in the water, so we had to leave them there and come back, walk back.
Wow.
Then we waited till that evening at about 11:30 at night, and someone had called us on our cell phone and said, you have 20 minutes, get out, it's going to break again. And that was when we just started throwing ourselves into the car, 2 or 3 pairs of clothes, and tried to leave. It was midnight, nothing anywhere. We were going in places you should have never driven, up on the side of the river, between the Mississippi River was only about 200 feet away, going as fast as anything, and then flooding on the other side, and we're riding the top of the levee.
Wow.
Just go straight through electric wires. Don't even worry about them. Just brake. Just keep going. 1 foot on the gas, 1 foot on the brake so the water doesn't come back in. Water was coming in our car constantly, and we just kept going. And it took us about 5 hours to get to Baton Rouge, which normally it's a 45-minute drive. And when we got there, our cars were full of water. We all slept in the Walmart parking lot. And at that time, my daughter just couldn't take it anymore. She was 14, so I put her on a plane to Tampa with her sister, and we drove on to Houston. Little do we know when we got to Houston is all of this other stuff that had been going on at the Superdome. Because we were in Kenner, we saw all of the planes going over, and they were waving to us, and we thought they would come back and help us. They were only taping us. Oh. They had no intention of coming back and helping us. So they were right there within our grasp, and they were not coming. Yeah. The airport, it was as silent as anything. There was not a sound anywhere here. No people, no cars, no planes, nothing.
Spooky.
And it was it was the eeriest feeling. And when we left, it was a good thing that we did go out at dark, my daughter said, because if she had ever seen it, she would never forget it. And from there, things just started to deteriorate. You know, we saw on the news. We heard about all that. We spent 4 weeks in a Houston hotel on a Red Cross voucher just to stay there and try to find out what's going on. We finally came home. We were again turned away because the area in which we lived was not able to be vacated. You weren't allowed to go back. They said they want you out. We drove back to Houston, and then Rita was coming. So then we had to get out of Houston. So then we drove. We said we would stay in Lafayette. Well, that was when it was coming then to Lafayette. So we said, forget it. We're getting into New Orleans weather no matter what. And we did. And that was when Rita hit. We stayed in Kenner, and we went back to my boyfriend's house. And it had been underwater for 8 weeks, totally up to the roof. So everything was lost. He has 2 pairs of pants and 2 shirts when he left, when he came over here. And we have mold in our house. We have a lot of our items were gone. They had been lost. They were stolen. They were damaged by water. But life is very different here. That's up to that point. And now everybody has gotten over a lot of the shock, and now everybody is starting to become angry and trying to figure out what to do next.
Wow. listeners, I don't know if you're listening from the storm hit areas or if you're high and dry like I am in Stona, but I mean, just to hear this kind of devastation, I think most of us have no idea what it's really like and how incredibly shocking it is, how painful it is. I've been in areas where there's nobody there during some kind of disaster, and I'm here to tell you it is indeed a scary feeling. It's just the strangest feeling in the world to know something's coming and you're the only one there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it must have been so frustrating to have planes and helicopters going over and just looking at you in your misery.
And, you know, the losses and the story, like, they're long and they're painful and they're deep, and they're getting longer as they're being told by all of them who will listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we're talking, but who is really listening? Many people ask, how are you? Or they ask you, what's going on? Others still ask, when are you moving? Like, these are brief and short things going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just list them and start checking them off. But we have a story to tell, and very few people are listening. Many are getting bored with hearing our pain. Still others just ask to do the process, and then there's much to be learned here. You know, first you have to start listening. We've come to be a society of not listening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have two ears. We hear noise. We hear what we want to hear. You know, we hear what we think we're hearing, but we're not really listening.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So now you're back.
Now we're back.
And you have mold growing in your houses.
Correct.
And has the water receded?
The water is all gone. The interesting part now is there are different areas that have different problems. Some areas perfectly fine. Absolutely no problem. The French Quarter, parts of Uptown, parts of Metairie, parts of Kenner, River Ridge, different areas.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can drive just a half a mile or a mile down the road and you can see absolutely nothing, where all of nature is barren and sterile.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. Those homes will never be rebuilt. That just is the way it is. It's all brown. There's dirt everywhere. It smells still. There is no one living there. There is no electricity there. But then you can go four more blocks, and then you can have some people starting to rip out their sheetrock and maybe putting some other building to get back together again. It is varying degrees. The best thing to do is you drive. You get in the car, and you drive here, and you drive there.
Mm-hmm.
When they say on the TV that New Orleans is coming back, New Orleans downtown is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
That is half of a mile square radius. When you go down Canal Street, seven blocks, you hit where I-10 is there. Crosses over Canal.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of it, there is no electricity. There is nothing. There is no one living there. The cars are still on the streets that have been covered in this mold, and they still have the powder and all on them. There is nothing. Nothing.
What powder are you talking about?
When the water receded, there is a mold and a film from whatever was in the sediment that was in the water.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also all of the stuff that was in the air. Everybody started ripping out sheetrock. And
mm-hmm.
You could go down the street out in Metairie where we live, and we go down the road. All of the sides of the streets, everything that's inside the house. And what's the most dangerous part here is that many of these homes, especially in the older parts and the older communities,
mm-hmm.
they have cypress wood. They have mercury all over and lead all over in the paint because that was what was used. And they're such old homes.
Mm-hmm.
There's asbestos roofing everywhere.
Oh, boy.
It's very common to have asbestos roofing. It lasts forever. And they still want to replace some of those because, oh, I have a good asbestos roof. Let's just help put it back together.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows that there are so many chemical plants here.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff has to go someplace. I mean, when you go into a restaurant and they say a smoking section is to the table on the left and the non-smoking is the one right next to it on the right,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't make sense either. So
mm-hmm.
this is not making sense either.
Yeah,
it's all here.
That's such a danger. You know, most of us that are in the health field, we're very concerned not only about the chemicals and the mold that would come afterwards and all that kind of stuff and the building materials, but we were concerned about the sewage. We were concerned about illnesses. You know, I mean, so many things to worry about. And, you know, listeners, if you haven't been through something like this, this is like, you know, something that keeps on going. This is not over now that the storm is gone and the recovery effort has started. And a good number of people have moved out from that area and are living in other states now. And we've gotten quite a few of them here in Arizona. And so I don't see how it's ever going to be rebuilt the way it was, strictly because, you know, a lot of your people are gone. And then you've lost these ancient homes that were really beautiful and, you know, historical landmarks and such. And now the question on my mind is, you know, you and I know how bad mold is and what great damage it can do to people. And, you know, the one that's most in the news is the Stachybotrys mold, the black stuff that basically kills people eventually. And, you know, God only knows what kind of mold you all have growing there.
Well, the medical community's answer to that is that there's always been mold here, and that is true. There has always been mold here. There are many homes that you can go down the road and see a condemned sign on. So, therefore, if you've already had a propagated culture of it, you just further expand it. Biggest problem is when you take out the mold out of your home, they'll say, just take it from the water line down and throw it out in the street. Okay, so if you've taken from the water line down, therefore, those spores have been released into the air, into the home. They will settle somewhere else.
Sure.
But if they don't see it, they don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've now thrown them out on the street, they have now expanded into the environment.
Mm-hmm.
When they go out on the street, they get picked up by workers who are not protected.
Mm-hmm.
When they get picked up by the workers, they go to the middle of what we call the neutral ground, this big common ground of land in between two sides of the street and get deposited there. It has now spread in furthermore into another area. And so it has propagated all around. It really, it's just getting to be, let's move around. It's not going away.
Yeah, and as soon as the weather gets hot again, then those things are going to go crazy and grow. And I don't know if the listeners are familiar with the symptoms of mold. Do you want to talk some about that, what people should be looking out for?
I think the biggest symptoms, with it's not necessarily the mold. It's about the particulates in the air. It doesn't matter if it's mold, because also right now we have a whole lot of sheetrock, the asbestos in the air. People are ripping things out, and they're going back and putting sheetrock. You can come home, and your car can be covered with whatever color of the day is. And what happens is they're talking about the Katrina cough. Medical community here is of the firm belief, we have always coughed in this area, it is no big deal. However, if you think it's a problem, you can wear a respirator mask. So, I mean, it's very common to walk into Kmart or the grocery store and see these respirator masks all over the place. That kind of a paradigm doesn't really sink really well. Well, if it's not really a problem, why are they all over the place, and why should I really do it? Because they don't do it anyway. And what happens is, these people are inhaling that dust, and then they're turning around and using Clorox to be able to kill the bleach, which is further expanding their lungs and causing a toxic damage. However, it's still not a problem concerned by the medical community. They don't believe it exists.
Well, as you and I know, the conventional medical community is not real swift to respond to this kind of stuff, and they oftentimes have blinders on, and they don't realize what's really happening to the human body. And, you know, that's one of the things that naturopaths just get really irate about. You know, the body is supposed to work a certain way, and if anything interferes with it, then you start having disease, chronic diseases and cancers, you know, things like that. So the fact that the medical community is thinking there's nothing wrong with this, that's a big warning sign, folks, you know, just because somebody in authority says it's not a problem, I would urge you to read up on this stuff, you know, search the internet, go to your library, talk to people in the know, and I mean people who really know what this stuff does. As Dr. Gallagher says, it's not just the mold. The mold is bad enough by itself and can cause severe health problems and brain damage and things, but the asbestos can cause a form of lung cancer that nobody can fix. You know, chemotherapy can't stop it. You know, basically what happens is the asbestos fibers get in there and they're like little knives, and they cut up your lungs, and it just keeps on going because the fibers don't get dull, and pretty soon you have, you know, you've got scar tissue, and the scar tissue will not work as lung tissue does, so you can't take air in, and eventually you die from this,
mm-hmm.
and causes a very bad form of cancer called mesothelioma. And yeah, I've treated a couple of people that have that, and there's nothing you can do but, you know, try to do your best to keep them alive for a while. So now you're talking about a community where a majority of the old roofs are made out of asbestos, with people who are cutting up more asbestos to put on there, and the destruction of all these tiles of asbestos. And that's just one thing.
Huh.
You know, then you're talking about the gypsum and the sheetrock. You're talking about the, God only knows what other kind of chemicals are out there.
Right. What they're doing, my belief is that there's going to be new cancer. It'll probably be in about 10 years. And what it will be called the Katrina cancer. And it's just particulate matter that has become inhaled and has now caused scar tissue in the lungs.
Well, I would expect that too.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that the listeners need to know is it's not just going to be in New Orleans or the Mississippi Valley or in Florida, because the winds will pick this stuff up and take it all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's going to be anybody that's in the path of the winds from that area. And when it gets done with our country, it's going to go across and it's going to hit all of the other countries in the world. So this is not something that's just one little community in some little state that we don't know about. This is now a worldwide problem. And it's not going to go away, folks. So, you know, what are we going to do? We all going to run around with respirator masks on?
Right.
You know, that's not going to happen.
They don't even use them here. They just believe what they see or what someone else tells them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really, in other words, if I can't really see that dirt in front of my hand, well, I guess it's not really there. It's not really a problem. And the people, their living quarters are pretty substandard now. It depends on who you are or where you are. Your choices are you can live with family members. You can live in a hotel someplace else because there's not enough hotel rooms here, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you may have an apartment that no matter what shape it's in, you take it and you keep it. You don't let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could be living in a tent in your front yard. I had a friend, I had called her, and I said, oh, where are you living now? She says, in my front yard.
Wow.
And you can go down the major highway here, I-10, and there are tent cities under some of the portions of that highway. If you are lucky enough to work for some of the stores do have trailers for some of their employees, and they're parked on the store lots. Like, let's say you work from a Walmart or you work for the post office.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to get a few trailers that they park in their parking lots for some of their employees. So now there are a lot of trailers coming up. Many people are now, since they don't have enough trailers, it's gotten cold, they're taking their tents and they're moving them into their homes while they're working on them.
Oh, my gosh.
And also, the trailers are being delivered to the homes, and you can put a trailer in your front yard while you're working on your home, so you live in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we don't have millions of trailers, but the numbers are going up successfully every day, but at least getting them out of their tents or out of living with other people.
Yeah.
Because if you have a dysfunctional family, as many people may have or may not, or if you're elderly, you may not have any family to go to, so there's really nowhere else to go. I was in Walmart one day getting groceries, and since this has happened, you talk to everybody and anything that walks. And I said to the lady in front of me, she was buying a sweater. I said, oh, it's going to be cold. She said, yeah. She said, I would have never guessed at 89 years old that my entire life would be out on the street.
Wow.
In front of the house. And I said, oh, who, you have someone to stay with? She said, yes, a family member, but it's not good. So if you know of anywhere, let me know. Of course, I never did know of any place because there aren't any places to rent.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really quite sure how safe that woman is at 80 years old living with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that a lot of that is going on. And it's you want to say it's bad there and I'll escape it And I've had a friend from California. I was talking to her. She said, every time I talk to my sister, she's always in this stupor and she's whining about it. It's like, oh, poor, pitiful me. I said, how dare you say that to her? What you need to say to her is, I'm sitting here and I will listen, because there is nowhere to escape it. You cannot go to a restaurant, or you cannot go out to shop, or you cannot go to the lake or to the river and see some semblance that would take you out of that space. There isn't anywhere. It's miles and hundreds of miles of devastation all across the coast. So it's not really a place where you can go to be able to escape that.
Right.
And for anyone to say that outside of the situation, I also, right after the storm, had called up everybody I could think of on my cell phone. I punched every number just to talk to somebody. And a colleague of mine, I was talking to him, and I was crying on the phone saying, the water was behind us, and we just got out, and did you see it on TV and everything? He says, and he was yawning. He said, oh, excuse me, I had a really busy day today in the midst of my conversation.
Wow.
I was so devastated that I have not spoken to that person since. And it was just, and another colleague also, I had told him about it. He said, don't you have any family to call? So when you hear these stories from other people, it's just to listen. It's not to say anything about their experience other than to listen to it, because there is such a unique experience. You just can't imagine it.
Well, I know. I can't imagine it. You know, I've never been in that kind of devastation. And, I mean, even just looking at the pictures, it doesn't quite portray the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I've talked to some people from that area, including yourself, and, you know, just hearing the stories, it just is mind-blowing. One of the things that really got me was about the things you were trying to do to go in and help people, and about how you were turned away and how FEMA was turning away the trucks of water and the trucks with food and clothing and things like that. Can you talk about that a bit?
When I was in Houston, I was in such a state of shock I couldn't even think straight. I didn't know what day it was or anything. So I kept thinking, I have to go back and help. I didn't know how, so I called everybody I knew. Medical communities, the pharmaceuticals, the supplement companies, herbs, everything. Everybody will help me. Everybody will give me donations. Just tell me when or where to send them.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to get back, and just prior to the storm, I had gotten a letter from the medical board here and said it was impermissible of me to call myself a doctor in the state of Louisiana, since they did not recognize us, and that they did not want us whatsoever to help them. So I said, okay, I'll get some MDs, and maybe they'll come in with me and they'll help me. I had sent some letters on to a friend, and they asked the parish president, they asked the mayor, and they asked the governor. And all of their responses were the same. She is not to bring any help into the state, period. They would not recognize natural medicine. They had absolutely no intention of letting me in there at all to do that. They did not know anything about it. Therefore, they were not on an educating curve right now. They didn't want to do anything with it. So everything was turned back and turned away. I came back and tried again, said I would bring in mobile medical units with MDs. Let's drive all along the coast, help the people. Because I would drive into the neighborhoods, and my boyfriend said, oh, that man must have trouble with his truck. I said, no, he's sitting there crying. He was crying in front of his house, and everybody's just driving by. Here's this man sitting in front of his house crying. And nobody even bothers to stop or to see, because they all have so much of their own pain. But there's not really anyone to help them either.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very common here, and they consistently to this day are still refusing the help.
Mm. And what is the government in Louisiana doing to help people?
I have been, prior to the storm, I was on a healthcare reform panel for the state. Their job was, since Louisiana was in 50 parameters, the lowest on every single health indicator possible that's been marked, they wanted to change that. However, after a whole year of the meetings, we had absolutely nothing done because the politicians were on the board for the reform, but they also had a vested interest in where that money went or those changes. In other words, politicians owned nursing homes, owned primary care offices, owned some voting rights and those other things. So they had no intention. They wouldn't make no changes. So now with the politics, a lot of physicians have lost their offices, their homes, their patient base. People are not here. And I went to another healthcare recovery meeting 2 weeks ago. The primary care physician said that they were not interested in doing social services, like talking to people, seeing how they were doing, hoping they could help them with maybe, oh, could I get you housing, or could I help you, or do you want to just talk to me? Because social services only had a one-to-one return. They wanted to do medical services 3-to-1, and they needed to know how to start getting paid. And their answer was is that right now in healthcare recovery in the state, what they're looking for is blanket coverage, because they believe if there's full coverage, then they'll be able to get paid.
Wow.
Versus being able to take care of actually the heart and the soul of the person. They're more interested in the recoup right now. And there has been an excessive amount of suicides and deaths since the storm, heart attacks, not being able to cope. There was even a heading on the newspaper about 3 weeks ago, "Welcome to Antidepressant City." I just got a newspaper yesterday. It says, "Wigging Out," and it shows a man's head cut in half. It says, "We've been drinking more and popping pills more." And this is going on consistently in the area because it is very stressful. You really have to fight for everything you need. Insurance companies are not paying. The percentage of them paying is probably less than 10%. And if you're in that 10%, that's terrific, but the rest are not.
Mm-hmm.
FEMA, random on whether they pay or they don't pay, and they may pay anything from $600 to $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
But that alone does not take care of anything that you really need.
Mm-hmm.
Jobs are gone. You may be laid off. All of the teachers, they laid off, fired tons of teachers. They've fired, Bell South is moving out, the energy company is moving. There's so many people moving that what do? You don't have anything that was stable before.
Mm-hmm.
Schools are, some are fine, some are not fine. There are swing shifts. You may go in the morning from like 6 to noon, and then the next classes will come in from like noon to 6 or from 4 to 10 at night, whatever. Wherever you can to be able to still stay in school. A lot of kids, my daughter was in a private school, they sent them off to boarding schools all across the country, just the kids put them on planes and sent them.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, I put her on a plane and sent her to my brother in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was not a school here. Now she wants to come back, and I'm discouraging that because that'll be her third school in 1 year. And because her initial school is not open. And a lot of these children are going through this. They're all different schools, all different places, and not really having a base. It's a lot going on.
This is so far-reaching, and the thing that impressed me when I first talked with you is, you know, you're not just sitting back and saying, oh, poor me, I lost everything that I had.
Mm-mm.
You're actually actively out there trying to help, and you're being stymied every time you turn around.
Absolutely. They told me they do not want to see me or hear me. And it's very interesting because when I was in Houston, I was there 2 weeks. I said, you know what, I can't sit here. I've got to do something. So I went down to the shelter, the George R. Brown shelter that was on TV. They had the convention center and they had the George R. Brown. And I went in as a medical volunteer. They were more than happy to have me. They recognized my out-of-state medical license. They said, hey, sign, we don't know how to verify you. The woman was trying to verify it. I said, go to my website. It verifies me there. It'll link to my licensing board. She came back. She handed me my card. She says, no problem. Go work wherever you'd like. We'd love to have you here.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in your own state, they refuse. I went on the radio this past Friday. Today is Tuesday. And there was a large report on the TV that says, things are okay. Things are generally okay, said by the DEQ, which is the Department of Environmental Quality, which is a state-run agency. The EPA, will always defer to the DEQ, because the DEQ will set the standards for what you can be exposed to within that state.
Mm-hmm.
The FDA sets up its own, but then the DEQ will barter their emission credits, their toxic levels, to be able to get up what they can do. That's the variance you have between maybe a clean state in California or in Utah, or maybe something different in New Jersey or here or Texas. So what your standards are not the same every state.
Sure.
And their big deal that day was that the seafood was safe. All bacteria tests on seafood are safe. I said, that's wonderful, but have you tested the metals? You're telling us that benzene, arsenic, lead, mercury, cadmium, or beryllium in the past 2 months have been high in different areas, the public areas, and have you tested them in that? And they refused to answer that because they will not answer that, and they did not test for that. And also, they've also, if you have to read between the lines, they said, we have tested it in public areas. They said, we do not have the right to test on private areas, in your homes, in your yards. So if they're testing on a road that's been traveled and may have been disturbed and dispersed, they'll get a lower level,
mm-hmm.
versus checking on your home where it's been sitting there, where you can have 1,000 times that level. But they didn't want to test there because that's private property.
Yeah,
so
whereas, if they really wanted to test there, they'd go in there and tell you that you have to let them test.
Correct.
So
they don't want to test it.
This is all bullshit, basically.
They don't want to test it because if they tested it, you would be condemned.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. I also went to a friend of mine downriver, my boyfriend's sister's house. We drove down. You had to go through all of these checks, point checks, and they would check your address and what are you doing here. It was Port of Lahash. It was south of New Orleans, about maybe 20 miles, and on the riverbank. And when we got to her home was on the left-hand side of the road, used to be. It had been picked up, turned around, and deposited on the bank of the Mississippi River. And that entire area is where the Murphy oil spill was. A lot of the grass had been burned because the oil had caught fire over the, the month or two, September and October. Homes were very, very badly damaged. Mold was everywhere. It was just like, looked like a tornado had gone through the whole area. What was the interesting part about it was coming out of there, on our way out, there was another roadblock, and there was a hazmat truck. The hazmat truck washed our truck for 10 minutes with water. The entire truck, top to bottom, underneath everything.
Wow.
And let us go. So if they're doing that to your truck, but they did absolutely nothing to you, is that not a conflict of something not quite making sense there?
Well, that kind of ties into all the conspiracy theory stuff,
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody says they're trying to get rid of at least a quarter of the world's population, and what better way to do it?
It did not make sense at all that they were going to take care of a truck and us spreading the dirt up the road versus worrying about us.
Mm-hmm.
There was a very interesting comment, which is the biggest take-home thing about this entire area, is it's all about perception.
Mm-hmm.
Right now. That is what we're fighting, because if we say we're okay, they'll believe us. If we say we want to have Mardi Gras, they'll believe us. If they say we are coming back, they will believe us. If they say we are all taken care of, it's a great place to come back, you'll think that. And they also said what perception is not reality.
Mm-hmm.
So is not that the paradigm that we've been fighting against? However, we're still propagating it.
Mm-hmm.
Where reality is not perception.
Boy. Well, next week we're going to talk more about that and about what we can do as individual people to help, because obviously things have been turned back. I heard lots of stories about trucks full of water, bottled water,
mm-hmm.
being turned away, and trucks full of food and clothing and medical supplies turned away. And, what could possibly be the reason for FEMA and the National Guard and the government and everything to turn these things away?
It was fear.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, if you're in such a state of being where your entire paradigm has now been challenged, and it's almost like letting someone see the inside of your closet. You really don't want that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all standing at the door, banging on your door, waiting to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to let them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's really happened.
Meanwhile, the people suffer.
Correct. You know, when you look at this whole situation of the storm, it's all about humanity and being able to learn more about each other and be able to help without restrictions. Because when we would see a storm, the tsunami, we would send a check. We would cry about it on the TV. We would talk about it for about an hour, and it would be over with.
Mm-hmm.
When you saw the storms in Florida, you saw how Homestead came back quickly. It was just a little cut piece on the area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had New Orleans, but they said, okay, well, it's even Homestead seemed far away from California.
Mm-hmm.
But now when we had New Orleans happen, it was not enough to just have New Orleans be the problem. We sent you out little tiny seeds. We sent out evacuees. We sent them all around the country so that now those people there can further raise the insight of those people in that area. Because you weren't getting it before. Now it's time you'll get it a little bit better if it's in your backyard.
So well, you know,
sending
unfortunately,
all those out.
Yeah, unfortunately, humanity is something that you know, we would all like to say that we're humanitarians and
correct.
We care about our brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is most people, as long as they have their TV and their six pack, are pretty
mm-hmm.
happy just to be left alone.
Yes.
And, you know, they look at this stuff happening on the TV and go, wow. And they're really
yes.
happy it's not them.
Yes, because I've had no phone calls for the past 2 months. I've had no emails. I've had nothing. You know, oh, we'd love to help you. What can we do? I haven't heard from anybody. No one. Zero.
Boy. Yeah,
and
this,
it has
is,
been
this
different.
Is something that's not just going away either.
No, it's not.
You know, it's going away in the minds of the people that are far removed from it.
Correct.
Which is exactly what the conspiracy theorists tell us is supposed to happen, that they want to happen. But listeners, for the people that live in the New Orleans area, they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of them can't leave. Some of them are probably now mentally damaged on top of it, just from the shock of being through that and the aftermath.
The shock and the stress has just worn us to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's health has plummeted. It is so stressful. When you get home, I mean, all of our bills have kind of been deferred now till about the middle or the end of November.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we're in the beginning of December, all the mortgage companies want all your back payments or they're foreclosing. The electric company is sending you a bill from August to December now, and you could have a $2,000 or $3,000 bill where before you'd pay $100 a month. Your cable bills, your telephone bills, if your cell phone had been just... You know, your only life source is your cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
You probably use maybe a year's worth of minutes in the month of October when you can finally get some service.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they don't adjust it. Some of them may have slightly, but they don't adjust it. So you have all of these huge, huge bills now, and you're just looking at them, and what do you do?
Yeah.
What do you do? It's great. Oh, yeah, there are many signs here. You can go... Believe me, you can go to work to Burger King and you can get $10 an hour right now.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be happy to have you. McDonald's, $8.75. Other fast food places, $10 to $12 to work in a grocery store. There are those jobs. But there's also the other problems. Your back bills, maybe not having your family here with you, your living conditions, the schools, and the biggest thing, safety. We're less than 6 months away now from the next hurricane season. What do you do? Do you bother to do anything with your home or your apartment? Or do you just sit on it and say, well, if it comes around again, well, then we're done.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly no government or insurance will help you then because they had no intention of helping you now in the first place.
Yeah, that's the thing on this particular site on Blog and Service, there's a lot of that stuff that's been brought to light. And a lot of documents that are showing up now and people who were involved in seeing what was going on from the governmental side that are kind of whistleblowers, you know,
mm-hmm.
And it's quite shocking to think that our own government would ignore the people the way that it has. And it's quite shocking to think that there are people in power who would turn away help for those who are less fortunate and then go back to their own comfortable little homes and not care about those people who don't have food or water or a decent place to live. That's a shocking thing. And that is a crime against humanity, really.
But I think the crime against humanity has always been here, and I think that's the point some of us may be missing, too,
mm-hmm.
is because if you look at the medical community, they have always had it. This is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it. A great deal of the population, I'm not sure what percentage, it's not over 50%, but, you know, it's a pretty good percentage, was involved in trials, clinical trials here.
Mm-hmm.
A great many had been working at petroleum companies or processing companies, and they would say to me, oh, but the company takes my blood every 6 months. They are really watching me, and they're making sure I'm in great health. I said, the reason they are taking your blood every 6 months is because they want to see they're using you as a human indicator of when the exposure is enough, and then they will let you go.
Mm-hmm.
That is very common across the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
It's a well-known thing. And, in this area, this is just what the medical community has set up. They were saying, we were very distraught when Charity Hospital went down because Charity Hospital was where all the people went that did not have money. They went in. They didn't have physicians. It was, we will take care of you whenever, when you come in.
Mm-hmm.
And now there is none. And they said that they do not, they refuse to replace that with another same type system. They do not want another charity.
And there's a lot of people that are going to die in misery because of that.
Correct. But then, yet, they're refusing me to come out and give help where mine was free anyway. They still refused the help. And they have full intentions of refusing the help.
You know, if there's any listener out there that can help with this, if you would contact me, get on my website, which is drvalerienmd.com, and you can get to that on blog and service under Enlightened Medicine Show. If you have any way that you can help, please email me or get on my website and give me a call. I will get the information to Dr. Gallagher, and we'll see what we can do to help this situation. And I know there's plenty of listeners out there who either have enough money to help or they know the right people to help, or they can help in some manner. And so we're asking you for help now. We're asking you to stand up and be counted as one who cares and one who will do what they can to help. And, you know, if you're not inclined to do that, all I can say is, boy, do you have a big lesson coming, because mm-hmm. it's not just Louisiana, you guys. It's going to be us too.
Right.
And wherever you are that you think you're safe, you know, while you're sitting there all snug as a bug and you're all happy about where you are and you think you've been so smart to find a safe place, you can be reached anywhere. And with the things that are going on in the world right now, it's getting really, really serious. So it would behoove you to help those that you can help while you can. And hopefully that help will be returned to you when it's your turn to go through this. Because, you know, what goes around comes around.
Mm-hmm. You know, I would just like to close with something I had written.
Mm-hmm.
If you could almost just, everyone just close their eyes and think of this and feel it, because it was something that I wrote. There was a woman on the television, okay? It was a real woman. Woman was about 56 years old, standing in front of her house in a regular, I guess you would call it lower middle class area.
Mm-hmm.
And she really looked lost. Her house is damaged beyond repair. The few dollars or help that FEMA and the Red Cross were giving is stopped, and there is now nothing helping anyone in her area. The insurance people are not paying out. FEMA has stopped, and there is now nothing giving anything else in the area. Social services are not in place, and there is no funding for such, so Social Security is also gone to some people. Those that do not have family and friends, where are they to go? What do you do when you have nothing? And that means nothing. That means that what you carry in a backpack is what you have. There are no cell phones, no computers, no bank accounts, no mailing address, no 401k funds, no Social Security checks, no place to go. Can you define what hope means? Does this sound like a loss? Can you see her despair? Can you touch her heart? Can you help her heal? Can you connect with her soul? Can you see in her eyes? Can you feel her heartbeat? Can you engage her energy field? Can you feel compassion? Can you see yourself in her position? Can you see your family in her position? Can you feel her loss of control, her sense of wonderment, her intuition? Can you know her abilities, and can you bring her help? Can you be responsible to engage with her? Can you take her on her plan? Can you support her fully? Can you be sure to be committed to her? Can you be there for her? Can you stay and say what you have said? Can you be true, honest, real, compassionate? And can you be an angel, or can you be a human? Can you be all that we want and need? A real angel on earth, having a human experience and engaging with the other being in a real moment of love and light is what it's all about here.
That about says it all.
And it's everywhere if you just open your eyes to it. And many people don't open their eyes to it. You can go to a grocery store and stand there. I walked in, woman standing in the front crying. You can look over to your right. People don't know where they are, what they're doing. You can go into the store and it's not your familiar store and your things aren't there. Or when you call up California and you're asking them for an application for a license there, they say, well, you can email it to us. You can mail it to us. I said, do you not understand? I don't have a mailing address. Do you understand? I do not have internet. It's 4 months. I still don't have internet. Do you understand that? Or I don't have a landline. What do you not understand? Or our bank accounts have been frozen because they were flooded. They just do not get that.
Well, of course they don't, because they're not involved with it.
No.
Next week we're going to talk some more about this, and we're going to talk about what the solutions might be. For all who have tuned in, I thank you for listening, and I thank you, Dr. Gallagher, for coming on and speaking the truth here about what's going on. And please, listeners, if you can help, you know, contact me, contact Dr. Gallagher. Her website is mypersonaladvocate.com.
Correct. Thank you for the time.
Yeah, you're so welcome, Dr. Gallagher, and look forward to continuing this next Tuesday. And I hope this has given the listeners a little food for thought, and we're going to talk next week about what they can do. So until next week, thank you so much for being on the show, Dr. Gallagher. Thank you, listeners. And I know this is a little more serious show than I normally do, but this is a pretty serious subject. And thank you for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.